It's not. Okay. Om Jnanate Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksuramilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kudamayam Dadati Shapadantikam. Let me just see if I can get online again. Then same problem. You have doesn't like this. It says it's on, but it's not connecting. Mukam karoti vachalam pangulangayate girin yakripa tamam vande siguru dinatarinam panchakalpa turuvyastya kripa shinduvevacha putitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You have one of these? When I'm connected, I'm using this as a USB device. I reconnect it. I just want to use it as a USB device. So, I forgot. I haven't used it in so long. It's gonna, yeah, right there.
Mm-hmm. So, you want to use it as a USB.
So, what does it say?
For what purpose?
For audio in and out, yeah.
For audio.
So, because the microphone on here is not working.
Okay.
So
you are connected with this.
What does it say?
And,
it says connect, right? But not recognized, so I have to download the driver. That's the problem. Nothing's working. I don't have the driver because it's a new computer.
So first we need to switch your microphone. It takes microphone. It starts now and it's registering here. Here it's not recognizing it.
I can go in here and we can see if it's recognizing it.
Seems this to start is reading the song. What is inside?
That's for No, this is a new computer, so let's see. Mm-hmm. Let's see if it recognizes anything. So if we go in here, and then we go input, and then we can see. Nope. It's not recognizing it. It's only recognizing the... so I have to download...
Probably something.
I have to download the drivers. Let's see if I get them. They're not connected, so... Anyway, this is not working either. Yeah, nothing's working.
Technology.
Same problem. Connection attempt failed because the modem or other connecting device.
Do you think if you restart computer, it will not have? It seems like yesterday he restarted computer because you need to do your password.
But normally you shouldn't have to. But anyway, I'll give it to you. You want to restart it?
Okay, try.
See what happens. In the meantime, I think...
But I will need your pass.
What I'm going to do is just... I'll just record on here. The best way is, anyone have a smartphone with data on it?
Yeah.
You have? How much data do you have?
One hour talk, you get that much data.
What's that?
1 hour talk, you get that much data.
With video? With video?
Yeah, with video, I get Skype video.
I think at least a gigabyte, no? Half a gig? You have? How much data do you have?
1 GB.
Okay, let's try it. So you want to see if you can get online? So we're going to start before we go online. Krishna Chaitana. Prabhunita Ananda Shudvaita Gadadhar Shivasiddhi Gorbhakavinda. So yesterday, we talked about beliefs, and there's something I want to mention that's a corollary that we didn't talk about, but something that I think is relevant to devotees, and I was just talking to a godbrother about it, so it's on my mind, and I want to talk about it. And when I studied this course on beliefs, one corollary to this course was the use of willpower. And this is specifically comes up in relation to japa, the focus of your attention and your willpower. Because we know when we chant, it requires some willpower, doesn't it, to focus. And we also have a philosophy which, if misapplied or misunderstood, creates a dependency on other people for direction, for inspiration, and our willpower is given over to others, where we think I should be dependent on you, and in my dependency I get strength, and then we think that's philosophy. It's on? It's working? What?
It's sleep.
Went to sleep? Oh my God. Wow, interesting phenomena, huh?
Whatever we press, it doesn't come back.
Gremlins in the system. Maybe Krishna doesn't want the world to see this class. I'll try it again. Let's give it a try again. Looks, something's there. So, as we said yesterday, Every action, every mentality is based in something we believe. And we pick up beliefs which are sometimes unhealthy in the sense that a belief does not align with what we're trying to achieve. And so sometimes in the name of Krishna consciousness, we develop beliefs which are actually working against us, but we think they're working for us. So, for example, we are told that when you sit at the feet of your spiritual master, or you could say any spiritual master, you're supposed to feel like a fool. Right? But then there's another half of that, and that's the balance. How do you feel like a fool but not act like a fool? Because you wouldn't want, your spiritual master doesn't want you to act like a fool, does he? No. But if you could say if you're a fool, you'll feel like a fool, and from feeling like a fool, you'll act like a fool because you're told to feel like a fool. But the other side of the balance is feel like a fool, but don't act like a fool. So I think this is a good example to illustrate how we misunderstand instructions. Because if that's the instruction to feel like a fool, then I'm thinking feel like a fool means act like a fool. And by acting like a fool, I prove what my spiritual master said is that I should feel like a fool. And then we develop a society of people who can't think for themselves. You've probably seen that. In becoming a devotee, sometimes you're corrected. Not this hand, that hand, not this word, that word, not this time, that time, not this close, that close, not this verse, that verse. And pretty soon you start to realize that you don't know anything. And you can even come to the point of thinking anything you know must be wrong because you've been corrected so many times. And you can get somewhat confused and not be able to utilize your common sense. So there's a letter, and Prabhupada said, I want all my disciples to be independently thoughtful. And Prabhupada was very much about empowerment. And we can completely misunderstand that and become, instead of independently thoughtful, weakly dependent. Just, what should I do? Tell me what to do. Right? Because that's surrender, right? Isn't it? So you don't, because anything I think must be wrong because I'm in Maya. And anything I feel must be wrong. But to speak, if I'm a woman, I have no intelligence anyway to think. And if I'm a new bhakta, I'm just as good as a woman who has no intelligence. And in this way, we can be destroying people by misusing and misunderstanding the philosophy. And then we develop all kinds of doubts in ourselves and weak dependence, where dependence should be something which gives strength, not weakness. I'm dependent on Krishna, so when I feel dependence, then I think, I can do anything, right? Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. There's nothing impossible in Krishna's service. That's proper dependence. Weak dependence is, I really can't do anything, Prabhu, just tell me what to do, right? It's not supposed to be that way, but it can develop that way. So if you misunderstand the philosophy, then you develop beliefs which are actually against the philosophy, against your ability to advance or your ability to achieve. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like they have this idea in the world of modern psychology, two people come together and they become what is called codependent. They depend upon one another for their own security, for their strength, for their balance, their happiness. And I was reading something which I think is relevant to this. You get two people with low self-esteem. They don't love one another, so they find another person who can love them, and they become addicted to getting the love of the other person, and those relationships always end up in complete chaos because they're not self-satisfied and they're depending on another person to satisfy them. And so I depend on you for my self-esteem. You depend on me for your self-esteem. So if I say something a little nasty, that will devastate you, because you don't have your own. You're not secure with your own, with who you are. So you become codependent in a weak way. And if somebody comes to Krishna consciousness and they already have that mentality, and they're told, you should completely depend on your guru, you should do whatever your temple president says, you should totally depend on Krishna, be totally dependent on Krishna, then they'll take it through that filtering in, oh great, I don't have to think. People will just tell me what to do, and I'll just do whatever they say. And it's not what Prabhupada wants us to do, and it's not the way he wants us to think. And I think it's a danger, and we have to be careful. And also, we have to see if in the temples we're living in, the training that's going on in any way plays into that, because we unknowingly start putting beliefs in people's heads, and people are very open and submissive when they're new because they're trying to figure everything out, and you're older, so they'll listen to you. And in fact, research shows that people have more faith and trust in priests than they do in their parents. So if you're in a position of a priest, people will trust you more than basically anyone on the planet. You know, that smells of a cult, right? So what we're trying to do is help people develop beliefs which are healthy, help people develop dependencies which are healthy, empowering, right? Rather than dependencies and beliefs which cripple and handicap, will cause people to lose willpower. Their inspiration can only come from a class of some senior person who inspires them, and then they say, I'm fired up, I'm really motivated. 3 days later, what happens? The default position. The default position is, I'm addicted to being inspired. I'm not self-motivated, right? So if you create that mentality, or you have that mentality, then in a sense those classes become like drugs, and you need more of them. And you need more. I got to go to the Dham. I have to hear the class. I have to do. You know, it's like you have no self motivation. You've become. It's become like a drug, and it's not healthy. Right? You agree? Disagree? You can disagree if you want. I know this is. Sometimes maybe you won't agree with everything. So then you might say, but Prabhu, our process is hearing and chanting. It's true. But the perfection, the hearing and chanting takes its perfection, I don't want to say perfection, but it has its real value when you're self-motivated. Because then by hearing and chanting, you become more self-motivated. Self-motivated means, unless I motivate you, you are like a balloon and I have to blow you up. And after I blow you up, you've got a little leak in your balloon. So in 3 days I have to blow you up again, because you're not connected with anything that's internally inspiring you. You're looking for your inspiration outside of yourself, from other people. Because somehow you may think, well, what do I know? I'm not very smart. I'm not very talented. I don't know what to do. Anything I think of will just be sense gratification. If I think of what I like to do, I'll just fall into my, you know, all this kind of thinking, rather than connecting with what is that service that inspires me? Rather than using my intelligence to see what is my ability, what is my talent, and what will inspire me in devotional service. What's my dharma? An extension of that is, I don't know what inspires me. I don't know what I like to do. And then I think, that's a problem. I don't know if I was telling you the story. I think I was telling you the story when Prabhupada left. Remember, was I telling you that story? Prabhupada left, and the devotees asked me, how should I feel? Should we cry? You know, and I said, we've alienated our own devotees from their own feelings. And so I don't even trust how I feel. I have to ask somebody, how should I feel? That's the definition of a cult, when you have to ask somebody, how should I feel? Don't you think? How should I feel about this? Is it okay to feel this way? And if feelings are natural, your guru leaves, Well, how should you feel? You should break down. That's how. Not how you should feel. That's how you do feel. But you suppress it because you're afraid to feel what you feel, because you think, I am a neophyte, so whatever I feel must be wrong or bad or influenced by the lower modes of nature.
Is it an indication of wrong motivation when people trying to behave like properly, no matter what they're feeling?
Yeah, I would say it's maybe artificial or out of balance. Maybe the motivation is good, but the understanding. I mean, it could be a wrong motivation, but it could be the right motivation, but just confused. And when you get a very top-down, heavy system, it can cause people to think that they don't know how to think. Which in some cases, of course, is true, but we're supposed to be learning the philosophy in a way that we can think things and understand things and understand how to become self-motivated. Because if somebody says, that's a great class, I'm really inspired, then I think, uh-oh, I did something wrong. I don't want to inspire you, I want to motivate you. I don't want you to be dependent on me for inspiration. I want you to be inspired. To take what I said, digest it, and then apply that, so you may never see me again, but that class did something to help you understand more about yourself and how to be a better devotee. That's what our philosophy is supposed to do. So we're talking here about beliefs, and we're talking about the effects of beliefs. And when you understand beliefs and how they work, then you can start to see how your dealings with others may be installing beliefs which are not actually empowering, but may be subversive or undermining. Just like if you tell somebody what you did is really stupid. What? Yes, no?
Yeah.
Here.
We have internet. Now, yesterday she said, we got online, but you couldn't hear anything. All right, can you see if the microphone is set? You know, go into control panel or the settings and see. What was the last thing I said? You tell somebody that was so stupid what you did, right? So you don't necessarily mean they're stupid, you just mean what they did was stupid, right? But certain people, when they're told what they did was stupid, translate it as, I am stupid. And if you install a belief in someone that they're stupid, you know what they do? They start to do more stupid things. You understand? Here's the principle. You will not act in any other way than you define yourself. If you define yourself as stupid, you will not act smart. If you define yourself as smart, you will not act stupid. Or if you act stupid, you'll learn from it and you'll go forward and do something smart. How you identify, how you see yourself, your notion of yourself is how you act. You will never try for something you don't think you can achieve. You'll never try for something you don't think you're capable of. So if you can instill beliefs in people of their capabilities, they will do more. If you instill beliefs in people of their deficiencies, they will do less, despite their qualifications. It has nothing, you know, so we take the example of Arjun, qualified warrior. Isn't Arjun the most powerful warrior? Right? So somehow, due to circumstances, he becomes confused. Right? You know, he has a set of beliefs about how he shouldn't be a Kshatriya and he shouldn't fight. And how can you, if you're a Kshatriya and you believe you should be a Brahmin, you can't fight, right? So all these arguments that he gives Krishna are reflections of beliefs. If we kill our superiors, it's wrong. If the women are without husbands, then the society will be corrupted. If I kill just to get a kingdom, then that's selfish, all these things. So the result of those beliefs are now he's the most powerful warrior in the world is sitting on a battlefield. His place is Dharma. And he puts his bow down. I can't fight. Right? So he was disempowered by beliefs and circumstantial. But if we tell people, there's something wrong with you, can't you think straight, you never do anything right, etc., etc., and they believe that, that goes into their subconscious, they'll start to act that way. And it's important, if you're a parent, not to do that. And parents do that all the time. And generally, when we do that, we're just really reflecting our own frustration on another person. Isn't it? To some degree. But you understand how we can drop beliefs into people's consciousness, either good ones or bad ones, and then they'll act that way. You never do anything right. So now you create dependence and just ask me. Every decision you have to make, ask me, I'll make it for you. Because I made you believe you can't do anything right. You can't think for... Yes?
How do we accept one belief
but not another? Because we accept beliefs which we feel we can utilize. Well, there may be another reason. One reason is because it makes sense to us in the moment. Well, that makes sense, yeah. I'm stupid, yeah, that's right. That's why, because I did this wrong, and this person I respect said I'm stupid, so that makes sense, yeah, I am stupid. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done that. So it makes sense, and for some reason, you feel that that belief will help you. So if I believe I'm stupid, then I'll never do anything... I'll be careful not to do anything stupid again, because knowing that I'm stupid, I will make sure I ask people what to do before I do it, so I won't do something stupid. So it makes sense to you. And it's a good question, because we have beliefs right now that we gathered many, many years ago in situations which made sense to us at the time and actually may have been helpful. Like I was saying...
I think the microphone is set up. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, well, let's try it. Okay. Excuse me. I'm going to try to go to Ustream and broadcast. Remember the story I told yesterday about golf? Right? So I was playing golf and it was really good. And I developed a belief that if you're good at something, you don't have to practice and you don't have to learn, because I was naturally good at it. And that belief worked for me, because I actually didn't really like golf. And I certainly didn't want to practice golf. And I was kind of just playing it to keep my father happy. So that belief worked for me, more or less. You know, just everything's okay. She said yesterday she couldn't hear anything. Anyway, she'll call me.
I think it wasn't set up before when I set the microphone.
Oh, so you had it, okay. Let's see if we can even broadcast the video. Ustream Mahatmadas. All these classes are supposed to be there. It says we're recording. Start broadcast. In theory, we're recording. Okay. Can you send Guru Nishtha a text? She should be there in messages, and tell her we're recording. Okay. All right. So, you can develop a belief by an experience. Something happens and it triggers something that this must be true. And so it makes sense to you, and so you develop it. Either it protects you, or you feel you could utilize it, or in some way it works for you. Maybe someone says you're stupid and that works for you, and you just don't try in school because you don't like school anyway. So that makes sense for you. All right, I'm stupid, so why try in school? And I'll drop out as soon as I'm 16. So maybe that belief works for you, right? Now here's the problem. Now it's 30 years later, and you still have the same belief. And so that belief was picked up in a context which worked for you, but 30 years later you still have it, and it's ruining your life. So the problem is, you don't know you have the belief. And so you keep seeing this, like you're trying to do things, but they keep failing because it seems like you're not smart enough. And you don't realize it's because that belief you had when you were 15, because your teacher told you were stupid, and you believed it. No audio. The only other way to get the audio is to turn this off, plug it in, download the driver, and then try to go through here, because this will bypass the computer. Want to try that? You just go to the Zoom website and download the driver. Or it may be even on this computer. It's an HN4. Okay, we'll stop recording. It's an HN4. Just tell her we'll try to do something. You'll have to turn this off. All right. But anyway, we're recording this here. So we're going to turn this off. It's my computer broke in America, and this computer never really worked. And I had another computer and had to give it to my daughter because she's doing homeschool. So this computer is like, so you have to plug this in and then, look on, see if you can search for the HN4 driver. It may be on there. So you don't know you have the belief, and the belief was picked up. You also pick up good beliefs, like somebody told you were smart. Now, somebody may say you're stupid, and you say, no, I'm not. So you don't, it's your nature that you wouldn't pick up beliefs like that, because you don't believe you're stupid. So, or the person who said it, you don't trust. So, there are many people who are told they're stupid and useless, and they can't do anything and don't believe it. So, oftentimes the beliefs come when we're in vulnerable positions. Right? Then it may, if you think about beliefs you have and you can go back and find out how they came, it would probably make sense to you at that time that that's why I believe that way. Sometimes beliefs are put into you. Everybody's telling you the same thing. Your mother says it, your father says it, your brother says it, your sister says it, your teacher says it. You're just hearing this. You're really good at this, you're really bad at this. You hear it, so obviously you hear it enough, and then you start to believe it. That's pretty natural. Some beliefs come because they're social. Everybody believes it. The golden rule, do unto others as others should do unto you. Everyone believes that except me. I don't believe that. The golden rule is bogus. You can put it on Facebook and said, Mahatma Prabhu said the golden rule is bogus. This is the golden rule. Do unto others as others want you to do. Do unto others as others would like to be done to them. Does that make sense? I give an example. Let me give you an example. I go to an Indian's home, right? They cook for me. Indian cooking is purely in the mode of passion. There's absolutely no sattva in it at all. It's purely passion. They're devotees, everything's nice, they get up early, but their food is completely rajasic. It's hot and spicy and full of oil, not ghee, some kind of sunflower or peanut oil, which is completely not sattvic at all. Ghee, coconut is sattvic. Sunflower, these are like bogus oils. So they are cooking for Mahatma the way they like to eat, because the golden rule is do unto others as you would like others to do unto you. And Mahatma says, throw out the golden rule. I don't care how long it's been around. It's stupid. Do unto others as they want you to do unto them, not as you do unto yourself, right? Then I go and they give me their bedroom with a mattress that's like this when you lay in it. But that's what they're used to. And they go, Prabhu, this is the best room we have and the best bed, right? By my standards, it's not a good bed or a good room. Right? But by their standards, it's the best room in the house. So these cliches, these social acceptance, they're beliefs. Everybody believes. Everybody knows that. Right? So that's another way you get beliefs. Everybody knows. Things which seem reasonable. You know, I could convince you something's reasonable, and you go, oh, okay, that makes sense. I say, do you realize there's an elephant downstairs in the hallway? And they're going, no. And then you think, wait a minute, we have elephants. I've seen elephants dance. Maybe they could walk up the stairs. Maybe there's some reason. I go, I could believe that, right? It's reasonable enough. An elephant could walk up one flight of stairs. They can fit through the door. So I say, you believe that? And say, yeah, I could believe that. Right? Makes sense. Common sense, right? I say, there's 25 elephants downstairs in the hallway. No way. You won't believe that. It just doesn't make sense. How can you fit? How could they? There are not 25 elephants in Mayapur. And how could you get 25 elephants up there? So it doesn't make sense. So you won't believe it. So if something makes sense, you'll believe it. Yeah, okay, I could believe that. That makes sense, right? We went to the moon. Yeah, spaceship. We showed pictures. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. I believe it. You saw. I saw it. Seeing is believing, right? So something makes sense. We go, I could believe that. Then we get some scientific information. At the beginning of the universe, there was infinite mass, an infinitesimal point from which exploded, and then this and that happened. Scientific knowledge, all the big scientists believe it. Yeah, okay, I believe that. Information, science. And then, as we said, experience. This woman drove me crazy. I never experienced such misery in my life as I did living with this woman. Therefore, my belief is that married life is hell. And I'm never going to get married the rest of my life. Experience. Right? When I was a kid, I was 5 years old, I went swimming and I nearly drowned in the ocean. I'm never going in the ocean the rest of my life. You can't even get me near the ocean. Right? Some kids have that. They have phobias from past experience. Right? Now, some people take sannyas because they had bad experiences with the opposite sex. They have very deeply rooted beliefs. Some of it's from a past life. So, okay, you want to take sannyas, then that belief is useful. But if you want to get married, it's not. So the point to understand is we pick up beliefs in different ways. Some of them are useful and some of them are not useful, depending on what your goals are. Right? But what we're talking here is this belief that I'm stupid is never useful. I may be foolish, I may not know everything, that's for sure. Therefore, I come to a guru and I learn from him. That belief's useful, but the belief that I'm stupid, that's not useful. Now, here's the revolutionary understanding. Keep your ears open, because this changes the game. We've discussed how beliefs come through common wisdom, through experience, through knowledge, through what makes sense, through culture, right? We say Bengali mentality, you know, Indian mentality, Russian mentality, American mentality. It's a, you know, we think a certain way. It's culturized. We believe certain things. We believe in democracy. You believe in socialism. And now we're discussing that in our life we pick up beliefs, some of which are detrimental. So right now you have beliefs. I don't know how many, but you all, I, everybody, have beliefs which do not help us. And they were beliefs picked up along the way, and right now we don't need them anymore, and we still hold on to them because we don't even know we have them. Yes or yes? Yeah, it could be past life.
There's no way.
Like you were born with those beliefs, yeah. Yeah, I could see that. With my daughter, I could see certain beliefs about herself came to her in that life. She had them very young. Because consciousness is evolving. Those are the different ways, yeah. It's either from samskaras from the past life, it's from experience, it's from information, it's from cliches, common sense, culture. And so the first realization is that's just, or it's from religious, it's from if you don't believe this, you go to hell. Right? So, you know, you're young, you go to church, they have two sides, the side for the saved and the unsaved. And you first come to church and you're on the unsaved side and you hear the preacher saying, if you don't accept Jesus, you're going to go to hell and burn forever. So some beliefs you adopt based on fear. Or, you know, your grandparents were probably hardcore communists, you know, because that's what the propaganda, right? Right. Communism is good, the Americans are bad, you know. So I grew up, the propaganda was the Russians are bad. The Russians are trying to take over the world. I never met a Russian. There are no Russians in America. We wouldn't allow them. They were the enemy. But we were trained to believe that Russians were bad. If you grew up in South Africa before apartheid, then there's a good chance you didn't like black people and you thought black people were like almost subhuman. Because that, if you come from a certain family. Yes? In Kamala Sita's from South Africa, so she's well aware of this, that if you're raised in certain families, that belief is ingrained in you. Right? If you're raised in certain families, you will be raised to hate certain kinds of people. Resentment for certain races will be cultivated within you. Right? It's generation and it's passed down. From your parents, they got it from their grandparents, they got it from your great-grandparents. Right? So all this stuff is there. It's nothing. It's just in us. Right? Then you come to Krishna consciousness. If you joined when I joined, then you got all kinds of other stuff programmed in there, you know. Like heavy, heavy anti-women, heavy brahmachari, heavy fanatical. You know, if you don't distribute books, you know, your life is pretty much wasted. You know, and you know. As a last resort, you could like be a pujari or a cook, but that's almost as bad as, you know, going to hell or something. So you have a lot of very immature people placing weird beliefs and then creating kind of a dysfunction within the organization. if you respect someone, it's very easy for them to place a belief in you. No, it's great if their belief is good. But my point is, when you start looking at your beliefs, then you start to see, I have a lot of beliefs which don't help me at all. In fact, they're harming me. In fact, I'm trying to achieve something in my life and I can't get there. And I don't know why. Now you know why. Because you have a belief operating that's telling you you can't do it. Or there's something wrong. Or I'll give you an example. I was giving this example before, but I think it's a great example. I attended a workshop, and the workshop was based on the principle that you have a blueprint. And blueprint is just another name for belief. It's like a blueprint. You know, blueprint, here's the blueprint, and this is how the building's going to be built. So you have a blueprint about so many things, about who you are, about what you can achieve. This was a workshop where to show people you have a blueprint about money. And the point of the workshop is it doesn't matter how hard you work for money if you have a blueprint that money's bad, you don't need money, rich people are bad, it's the root of all evil. It doesn't matter how hard you try to make money, you can't because your blueprint is money is bad. And they told the story of a guy who was earning lots of money, but he was always broke. And he realized in the workshop that he was programmed as a young person to believe that rich people are evil. And so subconsciously he made sure he never had money. So he would misspend it, lose it, misinvest it. Because if he had money, it meant he was an evil person. Isn't that interesting? It's that subtle. That's what I'm saying. You have it and you don't know you have it, and you're trying to figure out why I'm working so hard and I can't get this. So the person who does the workshop, I think I told you, and this is really funny, he says sometimes people come up to him in the workshop and he's really focused on, you have to have the right blueprint for money. You have to feel worthy. Money's good, it's valuable, you can use it for a good cause, rich people are not bad, etc., etc. And he always gets people in there that are spiritual, who'll say, yeah, all this money stuff is good, but really, money is just not that important. And then he asks them a question. He says, are you broke? And 100% of the time they say yes. And what's his point? He said, if your blueprint is anything is not important, you don't have it. If your blueprint is, well, you know, there's all this talk about relationships and devotee relationships and, you know, the importance of relationships. But really, you know, I'm happy to be alone. I don't think relationships are that important. That person doesn't have good relationships. You can't, because you don't think they're important. You don't have things you don't think are important, do you? Do you find millionaires who don't think money's important? And if they have $1 million because they inherited it and they don't think money's important, give them 5 years, they'll be broke. Like pretty much 90% or 100% guaranteed that will happen. In 5 years, everyone who wins the lottery is broke. Because the only people who play the lottery are people who have money blueprints of poverty. And so it has to evolve into poverty. Because they never had money. The only people who play the lottery are the poor people. Did you know that? There's a joke in America, this is how you get taxes from the poor people. It's through the lottery. Isn't that funny? And this is just statistics. They play the lottery, they get like $20 million, in 5 years they're bankrupt. Because they're programmed for poverty. Donald Trump, bless his heart, if he goes broke, within a year he's a billionaire again, because that's his program, that's his blueprint, that's his belief. So you think about it. Think about anything in your life that you think is not important, and pretty much you don't have it. You don't deal with it well. Think about your japa, and if you say, oh Prabhu, my japa's not good, then I ask you this question, how much importance do you give to it? And then you'll see. Bad japa means I'm not giving importance. You agree? somewhere there's a belief that I cannot chant good japa. Good japa is not that important. There will be some belief surrounding anything you're not doing well or anything you're doing well. Find someone who chants japa well. There's a belief, I can do it, it's important, it's a priority, I'd like it. There's some positive belief around it. I mean, I can say this with confidence after teaching japa workshops for 10 years. I'm doing a course at the Kirtan Academy, and it's all based on psychology in relation to chanting, because there's a whole world of psychology. If you don't think you can chant good rounds, you can't. You won't be able to focus. You won't. And you won't try. Because if you don't believe you can succeed at something, you will not try. Or worse, this is heavy. Listen to this. This is testimony to the fact we're all crazy. If you don't think you can chant good japa, if you believe that, sometimes you believe it because you think, well, I'm just not really that advanced. In this life, I won't be advanced. Or Krishna doesn't like me, so he won't let me chant good japa. Or something stupid. If you start to chant good japa, you will sabotage yourself. And the reason is, listen to this, this is really important. Whatever beliefs we have, we subconsciously manifest in reality. We make them happen. So if you think you can't chant good rounds, you will make sure you don't chant good rounds. Even when you chant good rounds, you'll make sure you stop and chant bad rounds because it has to align with your belief. Is that weird? You understand? Should I say it again? Oh, here's another example. If you think you're stupid, subconsciously you will not do anything intelligent. Because you think you're stupid and it has to align with the reality of your life. Your belief has to align with reality. So you'll make sure it aligns with your reality and you'll make sure you do stupid things. Because that will prove your belief. That's self-fulfilling prophecy. That's what it means. So the good news is that if you have positive beliefs, your reality will start to change. You all are pretty depressed right now. Are you realizing you have all these like beliefs that are not working for you?
Like second life, thinking about what beliefs I have, why should I correct?
Well, as we said yesterday, it's very easy to understand your beliefs. Understand your actions, because your actions reveal your beliefs. If you don't have a lot of money, you don't care. That's your belief. You don't care. There's no people that really care about money that are completely broke or have, you know, most devotees, they don't care. You just care. If you have enough money to get to Mayapur and get two chapatis and a cup of dal and some sabji and a little breakfast and a place to live and you don't have to work, hey, that's heaven, right? Isn't it? And then when the money runs out, you go back to your country and you just try to spend as little as you can because...
Can't find drivers. Can't make it happen.
Why? They won't download the driver?
I didn't find really proper driver.
Did you look on, I might have it on my computer somewhere.
I tested to a computer.
It doesn't have it? Did you Zoom downloads? This is crazy. That's like the stars are wrong. Support downloads, it's not there? You're not connected? Oh, anyway, we can't get online now. You went to support downloads and you couldn't find it?
No. There was some download up, but just download some picture, not really.
Can I get back online? Anyway, just tell Guru Nishtha that. Just tell Guru Nishtha we can't. We can't do it. Okay. We failed again. Most devotees are Brahmins, right? Now, what is the blueprint for Brahmins with money? Whatever you get, by the end of the day, you have nothing. Right? That's a Brahmin blueprint. Right? So if you are a Brahmin to the core, you'll have no money in your bank. Because even if you have 10 million rupees tomorrow morning, by the end of the day, you'll figure out how to use it in service. That's a Brahmin blueprint. Right? If you're a Vaishya, Vaishya is you can never have enough money. That's the Vaishya blueprint. Money is good, and there's never enough. And if you're a Vaishya, I can guarantee you, if to the core you're a Vaishya, you will always have a lot of money. That's your money blueprint, right? And if you're an Indian, and you move to America, I can tell you what your house looks like. If you're an Indian and you move to America, I can tell you right now what your house is going to look like, what car you're going to drive. I can tell you one of the six companies you're going to work for. It's incredible. Because I stay at the homes of Indians all throughout America, or I have, and they all live in the same houses, in the same kinds of neighborhoods, and drive the same kinds of cars. And their kids study one of the five subjects. You know, engineering, computer science, MBA, doctor, lawyer, engineer, right? Yeah. So that's a blueprint. And a blueprint is a belief system. And it just keeps repeating itself. And that you understand? Right? And they all do well. Because they have a money. When an Indian goes to America, it's for money. Otherwise, why would you go to America? Krishna tricked them. They go to America and then they become devotees. Most of the Indians were not devotees when they went to America. They became devotees in America because they became so alienated from their culture, they were looking for something. You know, is this making it clear? Right? You know, you come here. If you're a Westerner, you come to India, you see the culture of Indians, it's much different. But if you dissect it, it's full of beliefs, isn't it? Like lines on roads don't mean anything. That's a belief, right? Lines actually don't mean anything. Lines on roads or queues, they don't mean anything, right? Now you can dissect that to a belief, but if you don't believe japa is important, you're never going to chant good japa. It's not going to work. If you don't believe you can become a pure devotee, you will not be that serious about your devotional service. You will not try for it in this life. If you believe it'll take you three lives to be Krishna conscious, well, then you only have to go one third of the way in this life, right? So you'll try one third. If you believe money's not important, guaranteed you don't have any. You don't have much. Guaranteed, I guarantee you that. If you feel a lack financially, you have a belief that's creating it. And you think, that is so stupid, that is so simplistic, it can't be, it's my karma, this and that. Alright, maybe it's your karma to have the belief. But if you change the belief, things start changing because your actions will change. I do a marriage workshop. There are beliefs surrounding marriage and ISKCON which are destructive to marriages. Did we talk about this before? Did we mention this? Can anybody give me a belief about marriage that you may have heard in the Hare Krishna movement in a Bhagavatam class that you feel would undermine a good relationship? Can someone give me an example? Yes. Shouldn't be attached to your spouse. But the deep, dark well. Once having gotten in, it's very difficult to get out. You shouldn't be attached to your spouse results in becoming attached to someone else's spouse, right? Generally, right? Yeah? What else?
Wife is like a tiger and children are like pickpockets.
Yeah. Children are also like pickpockets. And the wife is A tiger at night, but a witch in the day. So the next marriage ceremony that I do, I mean, give a lecture about how the wife is a tiger at night and a witch in the day, and the kids are like jackals. And actually, you'll never be happy in married life. Actually, I heard this at one wedding. One devotee was asked to speak, and they said, "There's no love in the material world." That was the speech, you know. So, kiss the bride and tell her you don't love her. Right? Is that... "Honey, I just want you to know there's no love in the material world and it is totally impossible that I could ever love you. But that's good because we'll remain detached until we get attached to somebody else." Right? Anyway, you understand, we've all heard these paradigms, right? What's the paradigm from the Brahmacharya Ashram? I'm thinking of getting married. It's like, "Oh no, Prabhu, sit down, let me talk to you. You know, this is like the worst thing you can do." Yeah. So if you enter a marriage thinking this is bad, this is going to be a deep dark well, you shouldn't be attached to your wife. What else do we say? Wife's a witch, kids are jackals. What are the chances of that relationship working?
Zero.
Yeah, zero. So what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to plant seeds of it's an ashram, etc., etc., this is helpful, and so forth. Then you have better marriages. So beliefs are affecting all our actions. And so what we did yesterday, so he said, go back from your actions and ask yourself, what do I have to believe if I'm doing this? If I'm not nice to my wife or husband or children, what do I have to believe to act that way? If I have no money, what do I have to believe? If I have bad marriage, if I have bad relationships, what do I have to believe about relationships? If I have bad japa, what are my beliefs about japa? If I don't like to read, what are my beliefs about hearing and chanting? And where did I get them, and how did I get them? Now, does that make sense? If anybody's not clear, ask a question, because I want to go hit the jackpot now. This next thing... You all look completely depressed, but the next thing, you're not going to look depressed anymore. Maybe a little confused, but not depressed. So does anyone have any questions?
As you're speaking, I'm noticing different belief systems where you see, like, the negative belief and how it's working in your life, and then you see situations where things change. So obviously, momentary.
Yeah, something happened.
If something happens and a relationship becomes good, or something comes, and then, so for example, just in a relationship, instead of it being not good, all of a sudden it seems like you're getting on really well, and then by default, you
go back to your old belief. Yeah. Yeah.
Destroying.
Yeah. A good example would be like, you're reading something or you're hearing classes about something, and the information is changing the way you're seeing something, but your beliefs haven't changed. So what's happening is new information is going over old blueprints. So you have to get rid of those old blueprints, so then the new information then replaces it. Otherwise, it's building new ideas over old defaults, and then you eventually default. It's like a habit, like they say. The best way to change a habit is replace it with a new habit.
But do you also, if these old habits we've had, you can see that they actually become blueprints of other people around you. So you actually have to, a lot of stuff we've been working within.
Yeah.
But there must be a certain degree where you have to actually communicate and undo things with others? Because I know by example and stuff.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Just by...
I don't know if you can do that. I mean, it'd be nice. But through positive exchanges with them, you can change their experience. I'm just reading this book. What we started working in corporations, and one of the things we do in corporations is... Haribo, Bhajan? Yeah, I am. Yes. Yeah, I'll call you when I finish. Haribo. So what was the last thing I said? And then after that? Oh yeah. So in the we're doing this thing to help companies change their culture. And so I'm reading a book about culture change, and they say one of the ways you change culture is by having different experiences. So let's say there's a culture of negativity and everybody's critical, right? So that you want to change your culture as a leader, you start being positive and appreciating people and patting people on the back and giving them presents, and the group starts doing things together. So your experiences change. Experiences are positive now. And positive experiences change beliefs, because we're discussing how beliefs change with experience. Or sometimes you don't like somebody, so a really great exercise is to take a company out together and go camping, and every night you live with a different person. So then you get to know them, and all of a sudden you like them. So your experience with them changes, and your beliefs about them change. Does that make sense? Like I always say, in temples, devotees sometimes need to do things just that aren't work, just to relate with one another, because it creates positive samskaras, and that creates positive beliefs. Yes? Yeah. Yes?
Is this like belief also has got some relationship with faith?
Not transcendental faith.
Yeah, I'm talking about transcendental faith.
That's different. Now, we discussed that yesterday. Then it's, what's your truth about the truth? What do you believe about the truth? Then it's your subjective view of the, it's still, you know, 30 devotees in a class, one speaker, and 30 opinions of what he said. Maybe, or 20, or 10, or something, right? We're seeing through beliefs that we don't know we have. And if you believe grihastha life is bad, at the end of the class, that's what you heard. If you believe grihastha life is good, at the end of the class, that's what you heard. We were saying yesterday, if I give you arguments for Ritvik and you're anti-Ritvik, all my arguments will convince you of being anti-Ritvik. Because you'll think these arguments are wrong, or they're stupid, or they're ridiculous, or they're insane. And all the people that promote them are completely crazy. And by hearing these arguments, you are confirming to me how crazy they are, that they do not understand Guru Tatra even one iota, right? And if you're a Ritvik, when you hear those arguments, you'll think the exact same way about the people who support the Diksha system. How stupid they are. Look at all these arguments we've given them, and they don't accept it. They must be envious of Prabhupada. So we're hearing the same information, the same verses, the same shlokas. So what's your truth about the truth? That's how beliefs work. So to become aware of your beliefs is very empowering. So we discuss where they're coming from and how they're working on us, and how we can go backwards by looking at what I'm doing, how I'm treating others, what's my belief? Others aren't important, I don't respect them, I'm the most important. You know, have you ever like been impersonal with someone, or not treated them, like not acknowledged their presence, kind of like walked by them and Didn't even know they were there. And then you realize later, actually they were there and I didn't say anything. And then you start thinking, well, what was I thinking? You say, then you might think, I'm just like absorbed and I think I'm all important. I don't notice people. What's your belief? The only thing that's important is me. I'm the center of the universe, right? So as you become aware of your actions, then you can go backwards and become aware of your beliefs and then start to realize which beliefs are helping you and which beliefs are not helping you. So your homework is to make a list of all the beliefs that are not helping you. And so you can do it by category. You can go japa, sadhana, service, association, money, marriage, you know, temple life, not temple. You can just go down the list and think, what is my belief about this? And then just decide, is this belief helping me or is it hurting me? And you'll see, you'll have a lot of helpful beliefs, but you have a lot of beliefs that are out of alignment. And the reason they're out of alignment is because they were beliefs that were working for you maybe 20 years ago. And they don't work now. They're just not relevant. Okay, then now, here's the icing on the cake. Are you ready? We have a drum roll. This is what, this is the most amazing thing about beliefs. We were talking yesterday, what do most people do? They take their life from the past file, and they take the past file and they put it into the future file, and their life becomes circular and they keep doing the same thing. So you see them 10 years from now, and they're doing exactly what they did 10 years ago because their future is created from the past, not from the future, you understand? Like, what do you want to do in the future? For most people, it's, well, all I can do is what I've done in the past. So it's a recycling. But the future is supposed to be created from the future, which means, what do you want to do now different? That it could be better, right? What are the new possibilities that you haven't done yet? So this is where beliefs come in. When you start looking at your goals, then you can begin to think, what belief would I need to have to achieve this goal? Right? Okay, so I want to have more money, or I want to have more success in a certain area, or I want to chant better japa, I want to have better relationships. Think, what would be a good belief? Right? Not that wealthy people are all evil, but that money can be used for benevolent purposes. Money is good. It can provide good facility for my family. I could do amazing service if I had it, and so forth. Then you, that belief is now aligned with what you want to achieve. Or maybe I want to become famous in some area, and my blueprint is, well, we should be humble. But I see with that, I've got it mixed up, because I realize if I have fame, then people respect me. When people respect me, they listen to me, and I can get more people to listen the more famous I am. So then I can alter my blueprint and say, no, fame is good if it's done this way. And then I'm open, because of my subconscious programming, to make the reality external. This point is very important. As you think subconsciously, your subconscious mind makes it align externally. You understand? We have the saying self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So, like when you have this subconsciously, then you start to see. You start to see how it's going to be in 5 years. You can see that, yeah, I can do this. It's gonna unfold this way. But a lot of us say, I could never see myself doing this. And you will never do it. Because you have to be able to see yourself. And it's because you don't have the belief, you can't see yourself. Does that make sense? I can never see myself like in front of 1,000 people speaking. Why? Because I don't believe I can do it. I don't believe people would listen to me. If I were on stage, I would freeze, whatever the belief is. So now your belief will manifest in reality, and you'll never have that happen. In fact, if it ever does happen, you'll just stutter. Because that's your belief, that's what would happen. Isn't that interesting? You could actually disempower yourself by your belief. So, the good news is you can create new beliefs that are not based on past experience. Most of our beliefs are based on past experience. Well, I could never speak to 1,000 people because, why? I've never done it before. And in my class in the sixth grade, when I was asked to give a speech, I got so nervous I forgot everything and everybody laughed at me. Yes? So I could never do this. But now, somehow, Krishna has inspired you to want to preach to large numbers of people, and you're trying to do it, but you keep failing. You get an auditorium, and it can seat 500 people, and 3 people come. Because actually, inside, you have lack of faith that you can speak to these people. And so that reality manifests, and nobody shows up. Isn't that interesting? So just by changing the belief, more people show up. Isn't that crazy? Whatever is happening on the level of belief must manifest externally, because your beliefs have to align externally. You will make them align externally. Now you're sitting there thinking, I don't believe that. And you're absolutely right. If you say, I don't believe that will happen, you're also right. And it will never happen. And that will prove that Mahatma is wrong. And so, but by proving I'm wrong, you've proved I'm right. You understand? Because by proving I'm saying you can get 1,000 people by your belief, and you're saying, no, you can't, because I'm not a good speaker, and you only get 3 people, that proved me right. That proves that your beliefs will manifest externally. And they already are.
I have a contradiction in my mind. What about our own endeavors and Krishna's mercy? They're the same because the two ingredients in one.
Yeah, but your own endeavors is to align your beliefs with your actions.
So that's the part of the deal.
Yeah, you have control of that. And Krishna is reciprocating with your desire. So if you want to look at it philosophically, yeta tamam prapadyante. I don't believe I can do this. And Krishna says, okay, let's not do it. I reciprocate with what, with where your consciousness is, right?
But how does that mind was called?
Because Krishna says, this is my line for karma, and I believe strongly. Krishna says, action and action. He talks about karma's action and action, reaction, action and reaction. He said, you can't understand it. So I think the first premise with karma is you don't really know exactly what your karma is, right? So and there are 5 factors of action, and 1 is your karma, which is the super soul, right? So there's 4 other factors in it. In an addition problem of 5, there's 4 that you're in control of. The second point is, everything you do has karmic consequence. Right? So if you really believe in karma, then I say what you believe is a karmic will affect you karmically. Right now, what you're thinking has a reaction. Every thought and belief has a reaction karmically. The other point is that your karma is based on your birth. And now, how old are you? 20 what? What? Oh no, you're 30. Practically ready to die, huh? An old lady, well. You're when we were hippies, we had a saying, don't trust anyone over 30. It's like when you're 19, 30 is like so old, isn't it? 30 is like, wow, you're so square. So I think as devotees we put too much faith in karma, and we don't realize you've had 30 years to produce karma. So if I read your chart, that was your chart when you were born. Now it's your 30 years later. So you've done 30 years of things. That's going to affect that. Here's your karma at birth. Here's your karma now. Did you know that? These two hands are different because you've had 30 years. Every thought, every belief has a karmic reaction. What about that? Dhirashami said that Prabhupada said 50% of your karma you'll get in this life. But just on an immediate cause and effect, everything, if you look at your life right now, everything that's happened, you could find a cause to it, right? You're all here in Mayapur. What's the cause? Did money fall out of the sky? Did the plane pull up in front of your house and go, free seat in first class, let's go to Mayapur? Did the room appear? No. You worked. You made money. You made plans. Right? You have arranged someone to take care of your things when you're gone. Everything is causal. So it's healthier to look that way. Because what? The place, the endeavor, super soul, the senses, what's the other one? Who knows? The field, yeah. What you're dealing with? Your endeavor, the machine, your body. Your endeavor, your karma. But we know Krishna reciprocates. So, I've thought about this a lot, I've discussed this a lot, and the only thing that makes sense to me is, number one, you don't exactly know your karma, and because you're a devotee, it doesn't mean, even if you know it, it's going to come out that way. And the smart thing is, do your best. When you go to Las Vegas, do your best to win. So you don't really know if you're going to win, but do your best. So, with my experience in this subtle world, you know, like we have this movie, The Secret, it's all ultimately about belief. You know, that your mind and beliefs are a magnet to attract what's going on. Now, the thing is, if you look at negative beliefs in your life, you can see that they're all happening, right? Have you ever got yourself sick just out of being nervous? You got so nervous, you got a stomach ache, or went to the toilet, or you got sick? We all have, right? It's hard to convince people that by positive, happy thoughts you can be healthy. It's easy to convince them by negative, nervous, and stressful thoughts you can be sick, because we have that experience. Right? In fact, if she right now tells me, oh my God, did you drink that? There was some arsenic in the bottom of the cup, I forgot to tell you. I'm probably going to get really sick right now. You want to hear something funny? You know when we do cheers and we knock the glasses, right? You know where that came from? I think it came from medieval times when all these kings were trying to poison one another.
Yeah.
So they'd go cheers and they'd pour into everyone's cup, because if you poison me and I pour into your cup, you're going to die. We're all going to die. That's where it came from. Isn't that interesting? Cheers. But if I believe that there was poison in here, I'd probably get very sick. So if you look at any difficulty you're having in your life, you can trace it back to a belief and you can see the cause and effect. That's easy to see. It's harder to see the positive of what you haven't achieved yet and say, if you think differently, you'll achieve that. That's harder to get you to believe. But, ladies and gentlemen, I have something that I think might convince you. And I don't know if I told you this before. Maybe I told you yesterday. When we became devotees, there was no file in the past to put in the future box, right? You couldn't take one stinking file from the past because your past files are all drugs, sex, and rock and roll, isn't it? You couldn't put those, unless there may be a few Brahmins in India, but you have your own problems with ritual and Mayavad and everything else. So maybe even worse, you know? I think sex, drugs, and rock and roll is a lot easier to overcome than Mayavad and Smarta and I'm a Brahmin and you're a Shudra. So, when you became a devotee, there was no file in the past that you put in the future box. Did you? You couldn't. It was all from this point on, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. I'm moving in the temple, shaving my head, chanting 16 rounds. There is nothing from your past that indicates that you could do that. There was only one thing, and it was the belief that you can do it. That's the only thing you had. But that belief was not based on past experience. That was belief was based on your desire. And that's why we did it. So, the teaching which I'm saying is you can believe into what you want to achieve. We've already done it by becoming devotees. We believed into something for which we had no experience to verify that this belief is actually true. You're a hippie today, or whatever you were, a yuppie, or a punk, or a what else? A drunkard in the street, a goth, whatever you are, a very nice, pious Hindu whose parents would die if they found out you become a Hare Krishna, and you'll go against all the traditions and you move in the temple. Whatever it was, we basically went against every belief we had and created a new belief that I can do this. So that's the beautiful thing about being a devotee and discussing beliefs, because we already did it. We already went against every file in the past. But most of the time, we're taking files from the past and they become our beliefs for the future. Oh, I could never do that. After you do this amazing transformation, then you say, I could never do that. Doesn't make sense, does it? You understand?
Yeah.
We already did it. We already believe. Now you're living here in Mayapur. That's another belief, that you could actually do it and not go crazy. You could actually live in India with all these really weird people who eat this weird food and blow these really loud horns that are louder than amplifiers, like 25 amplifiers turned up to 10. They're still louder than that. And they eat food that's so hot. Yeah, they eat food that's so hot you have to eat it with a fire extinguisher. And there's dust everywhere. And in a village, a white dhoti is actually yellow or light brown. You know, it's like, and somehow or other you're living here. And like all you Westerners, you were raised in nice houses which are clean and on streets where people didn't drive with their horns, and you know, people who didn't, you walk down the street, didn't stare at you. Right? Especially if you grow up in England, everything is like, in England, no blade of grass is growing in the wrong place. Or the wrong direction, or it's the wrong size, isn't it? And here you are in India. It doesn't make sense. And all your friends are saying, you're going to India? Are you crazy? Why would you? You believe this is a better place. And you experience this better because of your belief. Right? There are some devotees who do not like India, and no matter how nice it is, they go crazy. Because they came here in 1975 and had diarrhea for 6 weeks and never want to come back. And their room was next, well, their room was not next to the toilet, it was on the toilet. That's where they slept. I'm serious, some devotees slept in the bathroom. It was so bad. I'm never going back to India. And in those days, you make a phone call, you had to go to the post office. And you make a long distance call. And, you know, chances are like 20% after waiting a half hour to an hour that you could actually connect. And another 20% chance once you connect, they could actually hear you. This is extremely frustrating. So, you know, my beliefs about India is it's savage, backwards, you know, whatever. And then the British came and put all these beliefs in the Indians. And the Indians are like, screw Indian culture, we just want to follow the West. Isn't it? They got totally brainwashed. So it's all beliefs working. But the good news is that we became devotees because we believed we could do something that was not based on any belief in the past, but only based on what we wanted. So right now, what this means is anything you want to achieve, you can actually believe yourself into it. And you're thinking, how could I believe myself into standing in front of 1,000 people and giving a talk? That doesn't make sense, does it? Does it make sense? No, because right now you're thinking you can't, so it doesn't make sense. Because you understand this. You don't see it to believe it. When you believe it, you see it. Your beliefs create your experience. If you believe I'm stupid, then everything I said tonight you will think was completely stupid. If that's your belief of me, that he's an idiot and everything he says is wrong, you will listen to this lecture and think, this was the stupidest class I've ever heard. Have you ever heard a lecture like that? So-and-so speaking, oh, that guy, he is so fanatical. And then he gives a class and you think everything he said was just fanatical. And it wasn't. But because of the belief, that's your experience. We experience what we believe. You understand? Do you believe it because you see it? Or do you see it when you believe it? You believe yourself into experience. If you believe that you could speak to 1,000 people, you would be able to do it.
What about the action part? We create some beliefs, and what's the next step? I mean, okay, I understand. I need some positive beliefs in such a...
Okay, yeah. Okay, you may speak to 1,000 people. Your lecture may be terrible because you don't have the skills, but you spoke to 1,000 people confidently. We were saying last night, don't jump out the window and believe there's no gravity. Right, yeah. But sometimes you see, if you have talent and you believe in yourself, you'll perform on a very high level.
Maybe I wasn't clear. I was asking about some method, how it works. I mean, first step, I'm creating some positive beliefs in my life, and after that I'm like waking up every morning and I remember it and I make an endeavor to believe in it, or what? How it works?
That's for next week.
Okay.
First, I want to get the mechanics of it. Do you understand? In the ideal scenario,
yeah.
Think of any belief you have right now. You have beliefs you don't know. They're just operating. It's subconscious. Mm-hmm. So once you develop a new belief, you don't think about it. When you're thinking about it, it means you don't have it. Mm-hmm. You know, like let's say you think there's something wrong with you. I'm just like the worst devotee. I can't do anything right. Then you come to Mahatma and he says, no, you're great. Every morning, wake up and say, I'm great. I'm a good devotee. And you do that, but you don't believe it. You go into the mirror and you say, I'm great. I'm a good devotee. I can do good in Krishna consciousness. But inside, your mind's going, no, you're not. Because that's your belief, that you're not. So the affirmation is just over the negative belief. It doesn't do anything. So you have to be able to believe into it so deeply that it becomes who you are. Now, my experience is sometimes you realize the beliefs you have and how they're frustrating you, and you get to this point where you realize, I have to stop believing this because it's harming me. So like I'm sick and tired of putting myself down because I can see how it's destroying me. And out of like frustration, desperation, you actually change your beliefs because you realize unless I change them, my life's not going to be the way I want it. I'll never stop criticizing because I'm so insecure with myself. I have to pull everybody down to make myself feel good. I'll never chant good job because I don't believe I can. And you get so frustrated, and then you sometimes in that frustration you just... Maybe that's it. And you believe, you realize what you need to believe, and you adopt it. And that it becomes your blueprint now.
Okay, okay, now my delivery, that my subconscious is like an issue which I can't understand, and I have to have some special professional person who will help me to understand my subconscious. Then I can really realize what my beliefs.
No, you can realize your beliefs through your actions. Question you ask, any action you're performing, ask the question, what would someone have to believe to do this? If you're sitting there chanting, spaced out, falling asleep, spaced out, talking, can't concentrate, just ask yourself, what would someone have to believe about the holy name, or believe about themselves, or believe about sadhana to chant like this? And you just keep asking and keep answering until you come up with something and say, that's it. Now, did I tell you the story about how I helped someone with their japa? I think I told you that story. I helped them with their... No, I told this in a Bhagavatam class. This is a great story. I'm going to talk a lot about the same things because it's really subtle and it takes time to get this. This girl came up to me. And she said, during the week of Janmashtami, I didn't chant any rounds. Can you help me? The first question I asked her, I said, did your parents criticize you a lot? This is my first question. She said, what kind of question is that to ask someone who says, I'm having trouble chanting my rounds? I say, did your parents mistreat you? Did they put you down a lot? She said, yes. And she had no idea why I was asking. And I said, I don't think you care enough about your spiritual life, and that's why you didn't chant your rounds. With no philosophical answer at all. And I said, because your parents didn't care enough about you, you don't care enough about yourself, and that's why you didn't chant your rounds. And she was shocked, and she said, oh my God, you're right. So I went to the level of belief. So sometimes it's not obvious. That's not obvious, is it? I mean, what a shocking answer. And who would give an answer like that? You know, I could be criticized for giving an answer like that by some people. Where in the, what Shastric verse is that? But that was actually the problem. So you have to ask yourself, what would someone have to believe? You might have to answer that question 10 times before you actually get to the answer. Because you don't, a lot of times we don't know the belief until we keep asking ourselves. What would someone have to believe to not chant good rounds? But they're lazy. What else would someone have to believe? And you go, don't. And then you might get to this thing and say, really, actually, I don't care enough about my own spiritual life. And then you start thinking, I never really cared. I was a drug addict before I was a devotee. I destroyed myself. Or I was a chocolate addict. Or I spent all day watching video games. Or, you know, you might realize that you have destructive tendencies. And now it comes out in japa. And you just don't care. Interesting, isn't it? Who would ever think like that? But these are the subtle aspects of consciousness. So you ask yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. You keep asking. Why? Why am I not a good husband? Why am I not a good... What would one have to believe to not be a good husband? To not be a good friend? To not be a good disciple? To not be a good spiritual master? Good leader? Whatever. I believe everyone has to follow me because I'm the leader. And that's just what Prabhupada says. So now I don't try to be a good leader because that's my belief. And that explains why I'm not a good leader. So everyone's homework is to ask themselves why they believe what they believe in regards to actions which you would like to change, that you're not happy with.
In regards to actions?
That you're performing that are detrimental. I wrote a couple articles on this because I realized in teaching japa, self-compassion is important because sadhana is about nourishing you. It's like so easy for us to go out and preach, isn't it? Let's help the fallen souls. We're actually more inclined to help the fallen souls than to help ourselves, because it's easier. Don't you think? But sadhana is about you, about nourishing yourself. And some of us, actually, we don't care that much about ourselves. We don't. And you can't have good sadhana. You have to care about yourself enough in the proper perspective that you care about yourself so that you can care about others. You care about yourself because your spiritual master has given you Krishna consciousness to care about you. He wants you to go back to Godhead. So that's part. You have to care about yourself enough to become pure devotee. And some of us don't care. And sometimes we don't even have to search for the reason. We just say it. Well, I don't really care. You ever said that? I'm not doing something? Well, whatever. You know, I don't care that much. You know, it's just the way I am or whatever. Anyone ever said that? To say this just the way I am is another way of saying I don't care. Because if this is just the way I am, that means I'm not growing, and I don't care if I grow. Isn't it? Isn't that another way of saying I don't care if I grow? It's just the way I am. Yes? Here's a belief. You don't realize how there's a belief. This is just the way I am, that's a belief. I don't care if I grow, that's a belief. I can't grow, that's a belief. Or if the ego is really big, I don't need to grow because I'm already the best devotee anyway. Right? Or I'm so fallen, what's the use? Another belief. Everything are beliefs that have consequences in action. So if you go backwards, you start to see, oh, this is a bad belief. I should have another belief. Like, it's good to take care of yourself. Like my guru wants me to take care of myself. If we could just convince our devotees that the perfection of life is to have perfection in the ashram, the whole grihastha ashram would flip around and practically the divorce thing would be finished. We don't believe that. We don't believe ashram's that important. Distributing books is important. Saving the fallen soul is important. Grihastha ashram is, you know, as long as you get by. Your wife didn't throw a knife at you this month, you're doing good. Isn't it? Isn't that what we believe? No pots in the head, no knives, but I had a good month, right? Something I realized last month, I was teaching a course, and this is very important, I was teaching a course on Grihastha life, and I was studying a lot of books, and something came to me that I'd realized long ago, but it hit me really hard. And it's this, you get what you bargain for. And so a lot of us are only achieving mediocre results because that's all we're bargaining for. So our belief is, okay is okay. No knives this month, marriage, I got by, that's okay is okay. Oh, no, the belief is okay is good. At least I got my rounds done. They were terrible, but I got them done. So that belief is bad is good. You get what you bargain for. So many of us are bargaining very low. You agree? Yeah. Like, look at your japa. What are you bargaining for in your japa? What are you bargaining for in your sadhana? What are you bargaining for in any aspect of your life? In your relationships with devotees, in your relationship with your spouse, what are you bargaining for? I think many of us are bargaining for okay. As long as there's no fighting, as long as this and that, then okay becomes good. Whereas if you change your belief that good is good, okay is okay, and bad is bad, and that we need to be good, you'll see your actions will change. This is very powerful. Because I have this experience directly in my life because I was developing a business and I could never make as much money as I wanted to make, and I realized that I was okay with okay. And now I've developed a new business, and my goal, we have a company to teach Krishna consciousness to people and in corporations, and I changed my philosophy. And now my philosophy is this company has to be one of the top in the world in self-development. And it has changed everything, in my ability to teach has risen tremendously. Because before it was just, okay is good enough. If I can just go and give a lecture and everybody's like, well, that was good, then I'm fine, because okay, that was okay. Right? Was that okay? Yeah, it was okay. Good. Right? Now my mood is, my thought is, when I go into a company and talk, I want a standing ovation. I don't want okay, I want a standing ovation. That's my vision now. Standing, your standard is standing ovation. Isn't that nice? Do you think my ability and preparation is going to be different when I'm thinking standing ovation than I'm thinking okay? Of course it is. And I think we should all think standing ovation. I want a standing ovation from my wife, that you're the best husband that ever existed. I want a standing ovation from my guru, that you're the best disciple. I want a standing... Shouldn't we think like that? How many of you think like that? Raise your hand.
You mean from now?
Right now I'm writing a book, and I'm thinking, this book has to get a standing ovation. Because if I don't think that way, there's no way this book is going to be read by more than a few thousand people. It's got to be special. People have to look at that book and go, oh my God, there's no book like this. Right? All right. Rama's going to make a CD, and Rama has to think, this CD has to be like different and better, and people listen to it and go, oh my God, I've never heard a CD like that. That's how you have to think. Otherwise, okay is okay, or bad is okay, or good is okay. Can you relate? Look around you. Look around at the Grihastha ashram. How many Grihasthas' philosophy is okay is okay? A lot. You agree? Yeah. And Prabhupada said if you shoot for okay, you won't get okay. You'll get not okay. If you shoot for excellent, you'll get okay. You get what you bargain for. So look at your beliefs. They're just manifesting. You change your belief. Okay is not okay. Standing ovation, that's okay. And what, you know, okay, I want a standing ovation for my japa tomorrow. I'm going to chant such good japa, I'm going to get up and clap. If people in the temple knew how good I was chanting, they would go, wow, that's amazing. You know? You think that would change your japa? Of course it would. Yeah? So why don't we have beliefs like that? Because we don't, but we should, right? And if we have them, it produces different results. There's nothing that will change you more than changing your belief. There's nothing that will change your results more than changing your beliefs. Let me tell you something. I'm a very unfocused person. I do like, every day I do like 10 things. Sometimes I do them all at once. I'm like, you know? It's my, like, having a mind like mine, whoa. It's like, it's got ideas going in and out of it, like, you know, 40 miles an hour. Sometimes I do workshops, and I come up with exercises spontaneously. Nobody knows. I go, now we're going to do this exercise. Now we're going to do that. And I go, where'd that one come? I just made it up. You know, I didn't have time to prepare. I just came in, you know. So when I realized that in this new company, I want standing ovations from people, I became extremely focused on a few things that will make this company work. Incredibly focused, just by changing the belief. Isn't that amazing? By changing the belief that I want to get to that high level where I can compete with the best companies in the world, I'm so focused. I study all these books, I write. I study like 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a day just understanding human nature. How people change, how companies work better, so that I can go into a company and just dazzle them. And change their whole company and make it Krishna conscious. Mm-hmm. And like a needle out like a plow. But I'm just saying from my experience, that change of belief manifested in this incredible focus like I've never had before. Like intense focus. I'm a very social person, and I hide all the time, because if I don't hide, I can't do all this writing. A lot of times you don't see, where's Mahabhi? People don't even know I'm here. But I'm like, you know, early mornings just hiding and writing and studying. I know a lot now. You know, if you read every day for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, you know a lot, don't you? You've become quite an expert, you know. Then you can get a standing ovation, because you know so much. Right? So that's my experience. By changing the belief, all of a sudden, I eliminated about 80% of what I was doing and just focused. And it's very easy for me to focus. So my experience is, also, in my marriage, I realized, my wife said, you know, this marriage is not like, it's not going well. And then I realized, because my belief was okay is okay. And then I told her, I said, that's the problem. I believe okay is okay. And then I realized, that was my belief, and then I said, okay is not okay, standing ovation is okay, and my actions changed. I didn't have to try to change my actions, because the belief change, the actions change. It's that easy. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So naturally, my actions towards my wife changed positively, because now it's like, this relationship must be good. Good is important. Okay is not okay. Good is important. And I think so many of us have this, you get what you bargained for, okay, if I just okay, if my rounds were just is okay tomorrow, how were your rounds? They were okay. Okay is okay. Isn't it? Yes? Successful people, okay is not okay. Standing ovation is okay. That's how you become successful. Okay? Is that okay? Okay, anyway, we're going through layers. This is hard stuff to settle in because it's subtle and it's hard to believe all this. But just if you just look at your actions and follow it back to beliefs, you'll start to see it and then you'll start to believe it. And then understand you can alter those beliefs and they'll produce different actions. And you can align with what you want. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, go Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol.
And you mentioned about the next week.
Saturday. Oh. I don't know if you can come to the Kirtan Academy, you probably can. But we're going to talk about how psychology affects your chanting. Of course, what we just spoke about here, we'll also talk about. But what time does it start? 9:30?
Tuesday.
Starts Tuesday, right? 11 to 1:30, that's all. Oh, good. 11 to 1:30, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Can anybody come, or they have to ask Jasomati? Or
no,
you can come, it's over in the, across the street in
Smith.
You'll see a pondo across the street that direction, yeah. So we're going to talk about how psychology affects your ability to chant. In all aspects of... And then these classes will be every Saturday and Sunday night, and then next Saturday afternoon in the park I'll do something at 2:30. Every Saturday and Sunday, yeah, these classes.
So next Saturday, two classes, afternoon and evening?
Yeah, 2:30 in the park and then here. And then during the week, 11 to 1:30, Vaishnava Academy, Kirtan Academy. Yes? It will get on YouTube sooner or later. On my website.
Oh, okay, so this will be on your website.
Mohammadas.com. Yeah. Sooner or later. Along with the other four. We gave four other classes before. This is the sixth class. Some of them I think are on there now. Anyway. It'll get there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. So, where did she go?
Okay.
Leela Shakti.